Welcome, friends, to the Health Ranger Show. I'm your host, Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, the editor of naturalnews.com. And, you know, we talk about health freedom a lot. We talk about what's happening today. And every once in a while, we get to talk to one of the pioneers of health freedom. And that's who's joining us today. Over the phone is a health freedom pioneer. You know him. His name is Dr. Julian Whitaker. He has done so much for health freedom. He's written thousands of articles, many books. He has fought against FDA censorship and tyranny, and he has educated literally tens of millions of people about how they can take control over their health and get healthier without the need for many pharmaceuticals that might be compromising their health. Dr. Julian Whitaker, thanks for joining us on the show today.
It is my pleasure. Nice to be with you. I have a lot of respect for what you do, and I know that you do a lot of good in society. Thanks a lot for having me.
It's my pleasure, Dr. Whitaker, and I do want to mention for those listening that you were one of my mentors, and you didn't know that, but I subscribed to your newsletter many years ago, before I even started Natural News. And many of the issues that I talk about today were, in fact, the things that you first educated me about. So thank you for your work in the world, and you are having a tremendously positive impact. Now, let's talk about
health freedom. Well, Mike, I think both of us were kind of genetically damaged when we were born, because that's the only way I can explain how some people can see the very obvious benefits of some of the things like coenzyme Q10 and arginine and folic acid and vitamin C. People who see that through all the haze and all of the nonsense that is conventional medicine have to have some kind of genetic capability of understanding, and I believe you have that, as do I. So that sets us a little bit apart.
Well, it is interesting, and I'm glad you mentioned that the things that you and I both work to teach people, they do seem obvious to us, and they seem obvious to many of the people out there, but yet mainstream society seems very, very slow to accept these common sense ideas. Why do you think that is?
I think it has to do with the business of medicine. If we look over the last 20 years with pharmaceuticals, and we need to understand how the pharmaceuticals are different from natural medicine. A natural medicine such as coenzyme Q10 or ribose or L-carnitine, arginine, these are very powerful therapeutic elements. But they cannot be patented. And if they cannot be patented, they have no role in the large pharmaceuticals. In fact, Merck, the large pharmaceutical, was the pharmaceutical company who actually figured out how to manufacture and synthesize coenzyme Q10. Carl Folkers was working for Merck when he did that. And Carl Folkers was also working with Merck when he discovered how to synthesize penicillin. So coenzyme Q10 came from high-tech pharmaceutical company. But because Merck could not patent coenzyme Q10, it didn't fit anything in their business, even though I think it's one of the most dramatic discoveries of last century. So they sold the proprietary rights of how to make coenzyme Q10 to a Japanese pharmaceutical. So here is this wonderful discovery being exported to Japan because it didn't fit the business model.
Right.
And so that's the reason. It has nothing to do with lack of science. It has nothing to do with inappropriate studies. It has nothing to do with anything but the large pharmaceuticals do not use natural therapies, Mike, because they can't patent them. They can't windfall profits on them. The profit margins on these prescription drugs are unbelievable. Xanax has a profit margin of 560,000%. That's a 560,000% markup. I mean, 100 tablets of 1 milligram of Xanax cost about $170, $180. But that active ingredient in that 150 tablets cost 2.4 cents to make for all 100 tablets. So you can only do that with a pharmaceutical drug that is xenobiotic. Xenobiotic means that the compound is not found in life. And when you have compounds not found in life, you can patent them. So we have all of these statin drugs, Lipitor, Zocor, Provacol, Crestor. Every molecule of those statin drugs is not found anywhere in life. So you have this patent. Why do we need five or six statin drugs? We don't. We don't need any of them. But you have them because that's the business model of the pharmaceutical companies, and they have so much power and so much money that they will destroy natural therapies if they can, and they will continue to try to.
What does your treatment begin with? I want to talk about your center. You have Whitaker Wellness Center, and that's online at whitakerwellness.com, by the way, for those listening. It's in Newport Beach, California. So instead of using those statin drugs, for example, what kinds of things do you use to treat your patients and help them get well?
Well, in order to lower the cholesterol level, it's very, very simple and more effective and far safer to use natural therapies. One of the most powerful anti-cholesterol medications is niacin. If you take 500 milligrams of niacin per meal, you'll equal generally what the statins do. If you increase that niacin, you will continue to lower the cholesterol level, and the niacin will also cause the HDL to go up.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the pharmaceutical companies was trying to add a substance to the Lipitor or to the statin drug that would increase the HDL, and they found that when patients were taking it, they died more frequently. Well, that's not good.
Right.
And then Dr. Nissen at Cleveland Clinic came out and said, wait a minute, if you want to elevate the HDL, hey, guys, we have niacin. It's been around for 50 years. It elevates HDL. It lowers LDL. It lowers lipoprotein A. Why don't we use niacin? And he was harshly criticized throughout the entire medical community for being so brash as to say that you would use a natural therapy when we're looking for a pharmaceutical. So we use niacin. We will use fiber. We use glucomannan. We use flaxseed. We use polycosinol. And then we're able to lower these cholesterol levels in the natural way. But more important than lowering the cholesterol level is you want to reduce the risk of heart attack. We can reduce the risk of heart attack far better than they can get with a statin drug. And the way we reduce the risk of a heart attack rather than use the statin drugs is we use vitamin E, we use vitamin C, we use all of these lifestyle changes that will substantially lower the risk far more than you're going to get with a statin drug. So, the statin drugs, when a patient comes to Whitaker Wellness, if they're taking a statin drug, we stop it as soon as the patient walks in the door.
Oh, fantastic.
We find absolutely no need for it in any case. Now, we do the same thing with the oral cholesterol drugs, too. I mean, the oral diabetic drugs.
Right, right.
But with the oral diabetic drugs, we may not be as aggressive with them as we are with the statin drugs. But the statin drugs are just a waste of time, and they make people sick.
Do you also then teach people how to make those changes in their own lives in terms of food choice or exercise or other types of things like that?
Well, Whitaker Wellness started in 1979, and I had just been working with Nathan Pritikin prior to that, and I started using his model of diet and exercise. I had added vitamins and minerals, but we've always emphasized healthy diet. Our diet recommendations have changed over the last 30 years, but the change has been kind of minimal. We have decreased starch intake, increased lower-fat protein intake, and increased fish protein, and certainly have increased vitamins and minerals. So we have never deviated from the fact that the dietary choices people make is very, very important, and that exercise is very, very important. In fact, we have patients go for a walk right after each meal. We find that that's a very good time for diabetics to walk because it helps to lower the slows down the absorption rate of nutrients, and it helps to lower the blood sugar level and the muscles to take up glucose, and they don't have to have insulin when they're working. So it's very good for diabetics, very good for everyone. As soon as you get up eating, you go for an 8 to 10 minute walk, and that helps a lot. We emphasize very much exercise and diet. We cannot and do not emphasize exercise here as much as we would like. Number one, our patient population is pretty old. And number two, they are engaged in a lot of other therapies like ECP and hyperbaric oxygen and intravenous vitamins and minerals. So patients that come to Whitaker Wellness are pretty busy undergoing therapies that are addressing their particular concerns.
Now, if I could shift gears here for a second, I want to talk about health freedom and the FDA with you. I know you and I are both very passionate about this topic. I think we've both called for criminal investigations of the FDA. What do you think are the top things that the American public needs to know right now about how the FDA is harming the health of Americans rather than protecting them?
Well, first, you've got to understand that the FDA is behaving exactly as you would expect the FDA to behave, because they are virtually owned and operated by the pharmaceutical companies. When Congress allowed the FDA to fund the allowed the pharmaceutical companies to fund the FDA for a licensure fee to approve a drug, then they turned the chicken house over to the fox. So the FDA will write a check, the pharmaceutical companies will write a check to the FDA, will give them the studies of the drug, and then the FDA will either approve or not approve the drug. Well, if you are being paid by the company that is giving you the drug for approval, you're going to treat that company as a client. The FDA treats pharmaceutical companies as their client and not someone to be regulated. So public safety has just gone out the window. Both FDA and the pharmaceuticals knew way in advance that Vioxx was killing people. They knew that a long time ago. Whenever you find lawsuits against these large pharmaceutical companies, they should also be including the FDA, because the FDA frequently knew that the drug in question that was causing the damage was expected and known to cause that damage, but they were derelict in their responsibility by not acting on it because they were being paid by the pharmaceutical company. So criminal is kind of nice to point out what the FDA is doing. You know, they are just the handmaidens of a for-profit industry that makes drugs that can often and does harm people and even kills them, and the FDA supports that behavior. You cannot talk about the FDA and its responsibility in protecting people from the pharmaceutical company and expecting the FDA to do that in the manner in which we expect them to do it, because they're being paid by the very people that they are supposed to regulate. It doesn't work that way.
Why do you think the Justice Department doesn't go in there and start making arrests? I mean, they were arresting these CEOs of Bear Stearns and Company and these financial investment houses that misled the public. But what about the FDA and drug companies that mislead and kill the public? How come the Justice Department isn't making arrests there, you think?
I don't know the answer to that question. It's a very good question. It's one I hadn't thought of. You're right. They do in various businesses that defraud and cause economic pain to large numbers of people. They do pay a price. Most of the time, people in companies like that are just disenfranchised. But you're right, occasionally. There was a drug company that was hit with a very large suit in New York by misadvertising OxyContin. It's rare for pharmaceutical companies to receive criminal citations when, in many cases, if you look at knowingly providing and accepting payment for substances which they know they have misbranded, and they know they have withheld information on toxicity, which is, in my opinion, obviously criminal activity, yet that goes unpunished. The only area where it is punished is in the courts with the legal representation, and the FDA is vigorously trying to reform tort system in order for them to have free rides. The FDA, not the FDA, but the pharmaceutical companies. Pharmaceutical companies have convinced the government to take all the liability for the vaccinations. It's insane.
Yeah. This is the big threat right now, isn't it? That the courts could rule very soon. In fact, this is in the court system as we speak. They could rule that Big Pharma is completely immune for all effects from all drugs, even if they misrepresented the data that they handed over to the FDA, even if it's based on fraud. How absurd is that?
Well, it's very absurd, and if it's in the hands of the Supreme Court, I can't predict how they will go. I'm not really aware of that case, but I think I will look into it. Give me some details of that case.
Well, this is a case, it is a Supreme Court decision that's coming up, and it's a case, I believe, involving someone who was killed by a drug. It may have been Vioxx, and their family was suing the drug company, And the discovery documents during this court proceedings revealed that the company knew well in advance that the drug was dangerous, but they misrepresented the safety of the drug to the FDA. Therefore, you know, it's a fraudulent situation, but the courts are leaning towards granting drug companies immunity for all pharmaceuticals as long as they have received FDA approval. And their line is that the state courts or the citizens should not, quote, second guess the safety decisions of the FDA. How's that for some spin?
And that is even if the pharmaceutical company misled the FDA in a manner in which their decision would be positive and predictably positive, and they knew that by misleading the FDA, they could sell a dangerous drug.
That's right. Even in that case, they would be granted immunity. Incredible.
Well, that doesn't make sense. Is this on Vioxx?
I believe this is on Vioxx, but it may be a different brand name involved, but the rest of what I described to you is very accurate. It's just an incredible situation. I mean, you wouldn't see this in the financial industry.
No, you wouldn't. But see, this is what I think people need to understand. And my feeling in terms of the general public is that the general public needs to just take responsibility for its own well-being, that they should not trust the FDA. They should not trust doctors. They should suspend trust in modern medicine, except when there is reasonable and objective validation of what is being offered. That's what my patients do. You know, my patients require us to give them information as to what we do. My patients require them to give us information as to why we're not going along with conventional. They feel free to ask us questions. We feel obligated to answer them. It's a very different environment with a patient-doctor interaction here than it is in the traditional field, because if you ask physicians in the traditional field about the pros and cons of a recommendation, generally it will incite anger on the part of the physician and a break in the relationship.
Yes, that's true.
But that doesn't happen. But I think that is the only, I think physicians are the only group who truly do dictate what their customers do without their customer actually being involved in the decision. And I think the decision is most likely or most often inappropriate when the patient is making a decision out of fear. If you go to a plastic surgeon and you want to have a facelift, you're going to look around all the different kinds of plastic surgeons, and you're not going to make a decision to have a facelift because you are afraid not to have a facelift. If you go to an orthopedic surgeon because you have a knee pain and you look shop around because you are trying to find a remedy for pain in your knee, you're not going to lie down and have a knee replacement or arthroscopic surgery because you're afraid not to have the surgery. Fear is not a factor. But you talk to a cardiologist about having an angiogram or an angioplasty, or you talk to a patient about having a very radical surgery for cancer. Fear is always the primary determinant of the decision. And that's where patients get manhandled, because the physician can use fear to manipulate the patient into accepting what the physician wants to do, not necessarily what the patient desires or what would be best for the patient. So be very, very careful when you are afraid not to take a bypass, or you're afraid not to have a mammogram. So you got to be very careful whenever your decision-making characteristics are based upon fear.
I'm really glad you mentioned that. And by the way, for those listening, I want to give you a couple web addresses where you can learn more from Dr. Julian Whitaker. The first one is drwhitaker.com. That's just drwhitaker.com. You can find his articles, a link to his newsletter, Health and Wellness, at that website, and a lot more information. So check that out. You can also go to the website for his Whitaker Wellness Institute, which is located in Newport Beach, California. That website is whitakerwellness.com. People come to that institute from all over the world to get real health treatment. I mean treatment that actually works and not just pharmaceuticals that mask symptoms and leave you in worse shape than when you came in. People walk into the Whitaker Wellness Center in one condition and they walk out later, just a few days or a few weeks later, eliminating many of those conditions. And Dr. Whitaker, I wanted to ask you also work with a lot of patients who have type 2 diabetes, and you have helped, I don't know how many tens of thousands of people overcome diabetes. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Well, if you look at heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, and also to a certain extent obesity, but we're not really a weight loss clinic. But if you look at heart disease, diabetes, and high blood pressure, okay, they are a piece of cake to treat. It's simple. It's like falling off a log. It is so simple to take patients that have manifested these conditions, put them on a diet, start an exercise regimen, load them up on appropriate targeted nutritional supplements, give them specific therapies that will be helpful, and send them on the way knowing they're going to get unbelievably better. Now, if you look at the difference in the way we approach it compared to the difference of the way conventional physicians approach it, you don't need prescription drugs to treat these conditions. All of these conditions are just that, they're conditions. So we treat the condition by improving upon the ramifications of those conditions with natural therapies to lower the cholesterol level, natural therapies to instill weight loss, natural therapies to boost the immune system, very natural therapies such as fish oil and vitamin C, folic acid to lower the homocysteine levels and to lower the inflammatory markers. It's easy as pie to treat these diseases. Where we have our biggest problem is patients wander in here virtually drugged out of their minds.
Oh, yeah.
With 10 or 12, 14, 16 prescription drugs that don't treat the condition. They are treating a number, a cholesterol or something. And then you have these drug interactions, and it is just, it drives our doctors crazy trying to figure out how to withdraw, which drugs to stop, what are the drug interactions, how many of the patient's problems are caused by the drugs. The diseases are simple. You know, there was, I don't know who it was, that stated one time, if we took all of the medical pharmacopedia and dumped it into the ocean, it would be all the better for humanity and all the worse for the fishes. I think that was Oliver Wendell Holmes said that. Now, Oliver Wendell Holmes, that was quite a while ago. That was close to 100 years ago. It is even more so now because the toxicity of what Big Pharma's putting out, it was just unheard of in Oliver Wendell Holmes' day. Because they have the molecular structure of some of these drugs is unbelievable in the power that it has to get into the biological system and wreak havoc. So the diseases are simple. You know, if you really want to reduce death from cardiovascular disease, take every heart surgeon in the country and tie his thumbs together.
I love it.
Now, that would cause some people to die for lack of surgery, such as valve replacement, something like that. But the number of people who would be harmed by full cessation of heart surgery is far outweighed by the number of people who are harmed and who die as a result of heart surgery. So the minute you stop activity of conventional doctors, the death rate tends to go down. Every time doctors go on strike, the death rate goes down. Happened in Israel, happened in Los Angeles, happened in Canada, and everybody scratches their heads. Wait a minute. You know, the doctors go on strike because they got an insurance beef or something like that, and then the death rate drops 17% in the county. So,
incredible.
And everybody says, how can that happen? And it happens because doctors are the most dangerous entity to interact with in modern life. They're far more dangerous than any other commercial endeavor.
And yet, patients who come into your clinic, like you mentioned, they're on so many pharmaceuticals. Do you also find that they have these belief systems, I call them thought viruses, that have been installed in their heads by other doctors or drug advertisements or authority figures, whatever, and you have to deprogram those people and re-educate them? Is that a big part of what you do at the Whitaker Wellness Institute?
Yes, it is, but generally the people that come to Whitaker Wellness have progressed pretty far along debugging their thought viruses, not at all completely, because they've made a decision to come. I tell people that they will start to get better the minute they decide to come to Whitaker Wellness. Just that process of making that active decision is therapeutic in its consequences. So people, however, you're absolutely right that they come in taking all these drugs with all those thought viruses, I love that term. I'm going to use that, thought viruses, on their absolute necessity to take, and then you begin stopping them, then they begin feeling better, and it's an educational process. One of the things that we do here is, and there are very few physicians that do this, we have them say a mantra every day. Every day when they're walking around, we have them say, every day, in every way, I am getting better and better. Now, it sounds silly. It sounds foolish. It sounds too touchy-feely. But once someone begins to instill the power of his subconscious by actually training his subconscious to expect them to be getting better and better, it works. It amplifies and it increases the power of everything that we do. And so we have them say that all. We have them say it silently because they'd look kind of crazy talking to themselves walking down the street.
But I'm glad to hear you say that that's part of what you advise patients to do. I mean, you and I are, you know, we agree on so many things, and we're working in some of the same ways with empowering people. I've created a course called The Illusion of Disease. I'll even send you a copy of that course. And the first thing that it does is tries to teach people to get rid of that bad programming and open up to some new possibilities for self-healing.
It's a 12-hour CD seminar that I created.
Wait a minute. That's a little more than I can chew up. A 12-hour?
Yeah, but I can send you the transcript. It's a book that I can send you.
Okay. Is that transcript available to people?
Yeah, we're going to be publishing it very, very shortly. It's not quite ready, but I'll send it to you.
I'd love it. I think that's the kind of information that I like to impart to my patients, because anything that empowers them to change their thought processes in a healthier way, I love.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. That's why I was so excited to hear that that's the work that you're doing there. And I was also wondering, you know, it might be really interesting if I came to visit your clinic at some point and did a journalism story on what's happening there and talked to some of your patients who are experiencing these health transformations and just sort of told the story of what happens there.
I'd love it. Yeah, we literally are the largest alternative health center in North America. And we have little pockets like hyperbaric oxygen, ECP. Hyperbaric oxygen, we're the busiest hyperbaric oxygen treatment center outside of a hospital in North America, and probably busier than any of the ones that are in the hospital.
You have a hyperbaric chamber in right there in your institute?
We have 8 of them.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
We treat close to 70 people a day in hyperbaric oxygen. We can treat 70 people a day. So we have a triple place chamber. We have 4 or 5 single place chambers. You know, we have several little cockpit chambers. So we are literally the biggest hyperbaric oxygen treatment center in North America. And so we stay busy because we use it for stroke rehabilitation. We use it for wound healing. We use it for autistic children. They tend to improve a lot with hyperbaric oxygen. You know, we keep studying on how to improve the effectiveness of hyperbaric oxygen and also how to improve the delivery of it. We're now looking at how you need to hold your breath or increase the CO2 level in the blood during hyperbaric oxygen. So we're pretty active in all the therapies we write about.
That's fantastic. Do you also do exercise with oxygen? Is that?
No, we don't. We do not do exercise with oxygen. Unique thought. I have, you know, I might start doing it myself because I have oxygen tank where I can breathe 100% oxygen right next to my exercise equipment. I do it after I get my heart rate up, but I don't do it while I'm exercising. And I might start doing it while I'm exercising. That's not a bad idea.
Very interesting. Yeah. What other kinds of innovative modalities do you offer there that might get people excited to come visit?
Well, let's see. Our major therapies are hyperbaric oxygen, EECP, anodyne, which is an infrared treatment for pain. We have also acupuncture, but we have other bioelectric and bioenergetic therapies. One that is particularly good is FSM, which is frequency-specific modulation. And that helps with back pain. That helps with wound healing. That's what Terrell Owens used before his Super Bowl appearance. you know, where he was the most valuable player in a losing effort, you know, something like 15 days after surgery.
Oh, wow.
So those are the things that we use primarily.
Can you talk about EECP a little bit? That's where you have the air, the inflatable cuffs that move blood around the body and boost circulation. Is that what that stands for?
Yeah, EECP is a very effective therapy. Generally, the patient wears a body stocking. It is hooked up to an EKG, and then every time the heart beats, there's a compression of the lower extremity up to the waist. The body stocking goes from the ankles to the waist. So this compression generates counterpulse going up towards the heart, just as the heart is pulsing blood down to the leg. But the effect is it just counterpulses and causes a spike in the blood flow and the blood pressure, or more or less the blood flow, throughout the body. This tends to substantially open up collateral circulation, improves the elasticity of the arteries, is even approved and known to reduce angina in patients who have angina attacks. It's an obvious alternative to bypass surgery in virtually all of the patients. It increases ejection fraction. It helps with the circulation in diabetic patients who have pains, who have ulcers in their legs. So it's a very effective therapy for cardiovascular and diabetic conditions. So we use that quite frequently.
Are people who are perhaps considering coronary bypass surgery, what percentage of those people would you estimate when they go through EECP, they have such success with it that they no longer decide to do the bypass surgery?
I would suspect that if patients come here having been told to have the bypass, you've got to understand that having bypass or not having bypass is a separate decision regardless of what you do. And in general, I think 90% of the people who are having bypass would do better if they did not have bypass and just took drugs and just went on and lived their life. That's what all the studies show. So when you come here to do EECP, or you come here to do diet, or you come here to get chelation therapy, you get hyperbaric oxygen. Yes, these things substantially improve the cardiovascular condition and substantially improve your health. So therefore, very, very few people who go through our program, you know, prior to bypass surgery ever go and have bypass. Number one, we have eliminated the thought viruses on that score. Number two, there's been a substantial, just almost unbelievable and documented and measured improvement in their ejection fraction, in their other measurements of heart function, their exercise stress test performance, all of these kinds of things. So it's very rare for people to come here, go through the program, then wind up having bypass. It does occur, but it would be maybe 1 out of 100 or so of the people. So consequently, we are pretty successful at elimination of bypass most of the time.
So it's fascinating that when you look at the before and the after situation of people who go visit your clinic and they get these kinds of treatments, EECP, and you can look at the numbers and you can tell their heart is functioning better, their circulatory system is improved, and yet, for some reason, conventional medicine still does not advocate the use of this therapy. It's just astonishing. Why don't they use what works?
Well, I think the astonishing part is really not astonishing because if you look at the economics, it's all about economics. If you look at cardiologists that would be doing, say, angiograms and angioplasty, and so they bring a patient in, they hospitalize the patient, has an angiogram, has an angioplasty, a stent put in, it may even go backwards and the patient may die, whatever, all this kind of stuff. The physician will garner maybe $30,000, $40,000 for such. The hospital will garner, you know, maybe that amount or more. And so it's all done in 3 or 4 days, a couple other days in the hospital, the patient goes home. With EECP, you only charge about $200 a treatment, and you have to have about 35 treatments. So that means you're seeing the patient for about an hour and a half every day for a month, and you're doing that for about $7,000. The economics of it, no cardiologist is going to give up 100-fold increase in cash flow to do EECP.
Yeah. In other words, it's a lot more profitable to keep patients sicker.
Yeah, they don't think of it that way, or at least they try not to think of it that way. But that's the, You know, whenever you see very effective natural therapies being ignored by more traditional therapies, all you have to do to explain the behavior of the physicians who are ignoring the natural therapy is to look at the economics of it. There's no scientific explanation. There's no medical explanation. There's no, hoodwinking of natural physicians over patients. It's just look at the economics of it, and you'll understand why angioplasty and bypass and all those kinds of things, you know, are 45% of the profit margins of all hospitals, and that's why they're done.
There you go. That makes perfect sense. And folks, I want to remind you again to check out Dr. Julian Whitaker's website. That's drwhitaker.com. It's just drwhitaker.com. Also, check out the Whitaker Wellness Institute online at whitakerwellness.com. And I've got a question for you here that should be a lot of fun for you. What would you suggest if, let's say, that our national power structure collapsed tomorrow, the dollar, the Treasury declared that the dollar is worthless, the Fed bailed out of the dollar, created a new currency, and we had a whole new government that came in, and they appointed you to be the director of a new national health program? What would you institute in the first 30 days, or what would be the most important decisions that you would make for the country to stop degenerative disease and start improving the health of Americans?
I think that would be a wonderful opportunity. I would be known as a benign dictator. I would relish my power over my fellow man. I would certainly tell them to do the right thing. If they didn't, I would take them out back and make sure that they got the message that they better do what I tell them to. I think I would follow the path of all people who have power. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So I probably would relish the job. I'm not sure it would be good for me to have.
Okay. All right. Well,
I'm in jest now, but I think if you really want to have a change people's thought patterns, tell them to look for the effectiveness, look for the rationality of it, look for the safety of it. And when they get advocated and when they're being told to do other things, tell them just to follow the money. And if they follow the money and go the opposite way, they generally will be much better off.
Is there a way you think that we could change the profit model so that there's not so much profit in sickness, and instead there are financial incentives for entrepreneurs to make money by keeping people well? Is there some way we could turn that system around?
Yeah, there's one very specific way to do that. I was in Washington just last week, and I talked to several senators about this, Orrin Hatch and Tom Harkin and Johnny Isaacson from Georgia, and there are about 12 of them. Now, the very specific way to do that is, let's say a patient comes in your office and the patient has heart disease, and you're going to have a third-party payer, okay? Well, then the third-party payer says, okay, doc, here you have a patient with heart disease, had a heart attack, his et cetera. We're going to pay for that patient's care $25,000. We won't pay you anymore. So you treat the patient, and you expense out the amount of money that you have to treat the patient, and we're going to monitor your success, and you get to keep the rest for profit. Look, docs that are doing natural medicine, they want to make a profit. They've chosen a rough way to do it sometimes, but they still have to survive. So if you change the mechanism of payment, go to kind of the Chinese thing, to where a man will pay a doctor $1,000 a year to keep him well, and if he keeps him well, fine, the doctor keeps the money, but if the patient gets sick, the doctor has to administer to the patient, you know, without payment, then you have changed the entire economics of medicine. Right now, the sicker you are, the more they do, the more surgeries they do, the more complications you have from surgery, the more mess-ups you have, the more hospitalizations you have, the more bed sores you have. That's all an incentive. You see, you're paying for the service, you're not paying for the result. So you could stop it all. The second thing you could do is you could say you cannot patent any element that goes into a biological system, you know, because generally you could make the argument that when you put xenobiotic compounds into a biological system, you can never accurately predict the complications of those. And this is why we have such high levels of people dying from drugs, is the unpredictable, or rather the ignored. So if you would eliminate the patent on compounds that are going into a body, you're going to eliminate a lot of the drugs. You know, there have to be some kind of special dispensation for, but, you know, even antibiotics, most of the time, come from natural sources. Penicillin comes from bread mold. So that would be one way, but I think a better way would be to make the incentive of the doctor one of keeping the patient healthy at the least cost. And I was telling these senators, if you implement that, I'm your poster child.
Of course, yeah.
Because I can run rings economically about heart surgeons and diabetic specialists and this type of thing, okay?
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope that you get an opportunity to be involved in whatever significant reforms I think are coming our way, because currently our system of medicine, it just can't remain operating like this. It's going to bankrupt the nation. It's going to bankrupt the states, the cities, the governments.
It has almost already bankrupt the country. You know, I think the dollar fall and all that kind of stuff has to do with they look at us and they say, they can't sustain this. So that's why the euro is, I think. Anyway, but it's been very pleasant talking with you, Mike.
Well, Dr. Whitaker, thank you for joining me on the show today. It's been a real pleasure having you on. And folks, check out the website, drwhitaker.com and whitakerwellness.com, where you can learn more about Dr. Julian Whitaker's advanced treatment options for health and wellness. So check those out. Thank you again today. And thank you all for listening to the Health Ranger Show. Talk to you again soon.